Maybe you should go and do some contemplating.
Right reason. I'm the Bachelorette and I'm rapping to you poolside. Here to find true love, one man for my whole
life. Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hey, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Rose Buddies.
Welcome to the Rose Buddies Holiday Special.
It is a podcast where we talk about reality,
the holiday love special you've been waiting for, the reason for the season, the the Rose Buddies Holiday Spectacular,
babe,
starring your host.
I'm trying to tighten up our brand.
Griffin and Rachel McElroy, and me, your other host, Clive Barker, famous horror writer man, Clive Barker. It's a new thing I'm trying out. Is holiday shows. You don't seem to like this, babe.
Well, we don't have the content to go along with it.
What do you mean?
I mean, we don't
have... Like a very spooky holiday special?
We don't have any holiday content.
I mean, we do. Who's that coming in the door? It's Rudolph. Oh, fuck. There's a live reindeer in the studio. Our baby's in here. He's gonna get trampled. We gotta get the hell out of this studio. There's wildlife in here. You're so nervous about how loud I'm talking, you think I'm gonna wake this baby up?
Thus concludes our holiday special.
No, I want it to be a holiday special. We've been watching holiday specials nonstop this week, and I just want to contribute to the fabric of love.
But what we're talking about is not holiday related.
Fine. I thought we could. Like, maybe instead of saying any of the names of the people that we're going to talk about, we could just say Santa Claus instead. Huh?
Well, we want to encompass all holidays, though, Griffin.
Judah Maccabee is also one of them.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Let's just talk about The Bachelor Season 1. Do you want to start over? Are you mad at me?
No, I'm not mad at you. But now I feel bad that we don't actually have a holiday special.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Welcome to the party, pal. Die hard quote, holiday movie.
What was your plan, though? Was that you would just introduce this?
I thought we'd
this?
Just sing some carols.
Oh, you know I don't sing well.
That's not fucking true at all. I'm about to jump over this live reindeer in the studio and hug you until you believe in yourself.
I mean, we could make some tie-ins between season one of The Bachelor and
the miracle of the holidays,
the holiday season,
the holiday miracle.
There was maybe only enough women for one night,
huh?
And then they made it last for. Mm-hmm.
In this case, seven. Miraculously oily women. There were 25 of them. Christmas Day is the 25th of December.
There were 25,
hell yeah,
right?
This is ridiculous. We watched the first season of The Bachelor for you folks, and the whole time I thought I was having a fever dream because it was the craziest shit I've ever seen in my entire life.
We're going to take a trip back to 2002, ladies and gentlemen.
Although you're going to think we've taken a trip back to 1995.
So, ladies, if you would like to join us, go ahead and straighten your hair, add some blonde highlights.
Definitely.
And overpluck your eyebrows.
Yes.
And then maybe a turtleneck sweater.
And, gentlemen, if you want to join us, you don't have a lot to go on, but I guess
Big pants,
Gordon Gekko haircut.
Big shirts, big jackets.
A lot of semi-cash... Sort of that semi-cash kind of life, to quote Third Eye Blind, which was, I guess, also chronologically accurate. It was 2002. This was the first season of The Bachelor. Here's something that we should have looked up, and maybe I'll Google it. Was The Bachelor based on anything? Was it an adaptation of, like, another country's reality show? Because you know we do that shit, like, nonstop.
I don't know. I know that there is a movie with Chris O'Donnell, I believe.
Not the same. I don't think it's based on the movie, the Chris O'Donnell movie. It's actually based on the Chris O'Donnell movie, Batman and Robin. Did you know that?
Oh, you know? No, I didn't.
That's why Uma Thurman shows up and seduces the Bachelor and with magic pheromones. So, uh-oh. Please be quiet. Audience, please be quiet. The live reindeer in the room has been enraged. So I just Googled it. The Bachelor Season 1, it wasn't based on anything. This was original IP. This was the creation of something beautiful and bright and new and exciting and vibrant and sexy.
That kind of explains the tone of this season, which is very much like, hey, everybody here has agreed to do this. Nobody's being held against their will.
Yes.
We're not making anybody get engaged or married.
We're going to talk a lot about, like, the little differences that were, like, considering how much of this show we've watched and how immutable it is, right? Over the last, like, 4 years that I've been watching the show, these little differences are inscrutable to me, and they are, it's like living in a slider style parallel universe where just a little bit of stuff's different. But it's also kind of spectacular and remarkable how much stuff has remained the same, considering that this was the first draft of the thing.
Yeah, some of the concepts that are introduced in season one continue to today.
Yeah, in like, what, season 19, 20? I don't even know. So, yeah, first things first about The Bachelor, I think we should talk about a tight 7 episodes. And fucking one of those is the women tell all. So a tight 6 episodes.
Yeah, no kidding. Same number of contestants, but like a third the number of episodes.
Our bachelor, whose name is Alex, last name withheld.
Well, Alex Michelle. We know his middle name is Michelle.
That's fun. We don't know his last name?
I mean, we could if we looked it up.
Okay, that's fair. he is a businessman, and he has, if you've listened to the Rose Buddies, we've probably talked a little bit about how he is gone. He was abducted by, who knows, aliens, Yakuza. He's not around.
Yeah, Chris Harrison kind of pokes fun at the fact that this guy now wants nothing to do with the franchise, and they try and act like it's a fun thing.
Probably not so fun for this dude, though.
And not a big slight on the whole franchise that he will have nothing to do with them.
After watching his 6 episode sex romp, his horny 6-hour tour, I'm maybe not surprised that the dude wants to distance himself from the show a little bit. But anyway, Alex Michelle, he's a businessman. What do we know about
so,
the boy?
So he was 31 when this was filmed. They make a big deal out of the fact that he is a Harvard graduate. He also attended Stanford. He's a swimmer.
Okay, yeah.
And they make a big point to say that he has passed a background check, which I thought was nice. Like, hey, guys, don't worry. We're not sending these women to their death. This guy is okay.
This is something they announce in, like, his intro reel, and it's like, it is a, Rachel alluded to it earlier, but it is an important, like, thing to think about, and it was hard for me to think about, and I kept kind of getting lost a little bit watching this first season, because they belabored the point so much that for this first season, it was lacking so many of the things that we love about the show today, like the canon of this show that they've established and figured out and solidified over the past fucking 14 years. So when watching this first season, it was important for me to keep in mind the novelty was, here's 25 women dating one dude, and he's going to propose to one of them. And this was unthinkable, right? Like, this was every piece of press that was given to The Bachelor season one was about, how crazy is this? These 25 women are dating one dude, and at the end, they're going to get married. And a lot of it was like, how desperate are these women that this is how they're trying to find a mate? But this was novel to them and not the fucking, like, mechanical backbone of a, like, long-running television franchise.
Yeah, and they talk a little bit about this at the Women Tell All episode, of just, like, all these women are treated as if they're crazy women, and they get asked repeatedly, like, what did you think when you signed up for the show? Why would you do this show? Which I'm sure women today still get asked, but it's a little more accepted.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think everything that is different about the show can be summarized in a single point, which is season one, there was no capital B, capital N Bachelor Nation. And because of that, like, there weren't people writing about, like, ooh, look at this villain, or based on what we know about the series, who's he going to give the ring to this time? It was like, oh shit, they went to their hometowns. Isn't that crazy? Oh shit, they went to private rooms and probably boned. Isn't that wild? These things called fantasy suites.
Yeah, well, and also there was no interaction, really. There was no Twitter. Like, there was no opportunity to, like, engage with the show. So they probably had no idea whether, you know, it was really going crazy.
Yes. Again, like we said, there's lots of little differences, but I mean, broad strokes, 25 women, he's going to go on single dates and group dates, no two-on-ones.
There are roses that are given out at the end of every episode. Out.
That Chris presents in a weird fucking, like, mocky role.
Oh, and there's
role.
Chris Harrison.
Oh, we Chris should, Harrison, of
yeah,
course.
And there's Chris Harrison.
He presents the roses in this weird mocky roll sushi rolling mat.
Yeah. he drops this placemat that he uses to curry the roses from location to
Chris
location.
Harrison, who, this is his first job because he's 12 years old.
You know what? I looked it up. He's actually in his early 30s. He looks like a baby, but he's not.
Pretty sure. Because that would mean he's 45 years old now, and that's not possible.
Oh, no?
No, okay. No, no. He's actually 28 years old now.
Okay.
He's 1 year younger than me.
Okay.
So, yeah, we have a baby Chris Harrison, and people get sent home, and they go on dates. And then
there's hometowns.
There's hometowns. There's fantasy suites. Like, a lot of these, like, big concepts are in place. It is everything around those concepts that is different.
Yeah.
So
should we get started?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, I think there's like sort of broad observations that I think we can share as we go.
Yeah.
I think it would also take a really long time if we broke down everything that happened in the six episodes, but let's power through.
Well, I mean, the first thing I wanted to say is, so we're introduced to the women for the first episode, mm-hmm. and they make a big deal out of, first of all, the women are aged 22 to 31.
Out of the 25 of them, 22 have college degrees.
Yeah, they make a big deal out of how, you know, Alex Michelle is somebody with an advanced degree, and a lot of the women that are competing for his rose also have advanced degrees.
I don't want to throw shade at the, like, current sort of casting procedures and the current, like, slate of women that come out for this show, but they made a huge deal out of, like, these are young professional women. These
nobody's are listed as, like, a chicken enthusiast.
Free spirit.
Or twin.
Fucking twin.
everybody's listed by, like, an occupation.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of...
There's an attorney, there's doctors, there's a psychologist... and then there's also, you know, this is something I mentioned to Griffin. There are a few that call themselves actresses, which we don't really see anymore.
Yeah.
Most of the time now, if they're trying to be an actress, it's kind of a covert op. It's not an on the surface.
There was probably a season where they got burned. And like, as secretive as they like to be with this show, like there's probably too high a risk for them to cast folks like that. So yeah, we meet the women, we get the little short vignettes about a couple of them, and then we get we get a little bit of one-on-one time between Alex and Chris Harrison, which happens a fuck ton throughout these six episodes.
Yeah, see this, if you're curious about what we mean when we talk about Chris, you see, like, how he used to have more of a presence,
mm-hmm.
this is an example of that.
Yeah.
Should we talk about some of the differences, too, that come out night one?
I think a big one is just like the presentation of the show is pretty whack. Like it compared to today, where everything looks extremely like cinematic, for lack of a better term. Like the inspiration for the current Bachelor, it feels like, is this huge, sweeping, grand romance.
Yeah,
like a romantic movie.
Yeah.
And this season of The Bachelor was essentially like Blind Date. Like, no joke, that is about what we were working
the production value.
That was bad.
Yeah.
And not just that, like, the sets or whatever you want to call it were bad. Like, there were a couple of times I remember very distinctly in the finale, there's a shot where Alex is laying down in front of a fire and talking to a woman, and the camera work during this shot was so bad. Like, it literally like veered away from both of the people talking for a second. It looked like it looked like our son shot it. It looked like our newborn son shot it. There was like some parts that were just like, ooh, guys. And I think that stuff, maybe I'm nitpicking, but it really stands out because holy shit, is it such a polished product these days.
And so the staging. So another example is when it comes time for the rose ceremony, which, what do they call it?
The invitation night or something like
that. Yeah, they call it like invitation night.
It sounds vampiric, doesn't
it? All the women stand shoulder to shoulder in this huge room. And so there are 25 women in a semicircle, all standing like one row deep. You can't even get them all in one shot.
No, it's like they're playing a really fucked up version of Red Rover with a bunch of young professionals.
And the other thing, and this is something that isn't that long gone, but before Alex makes the call, he goes to what they call the deliberation room.
I can't believe this was ever a part of the show.
Where every single contestant has a headshot in a frame, which is something they've done that since I've been watching.
Well, you may be conflating it with, they did that for Bachelor Pad, and that is how they voted in, Bachelor Pad. And I don't think I've seen a season where they go into it, because it's crazy. First of all, it's super boring to have, like, a shot of a man just looking at a bunch of photos like he's at some sort of weird mass wake.
See, I always thought it was, like, a nice nod to the fact of, like, you may not remember who all these women are. So here are some helpful photos while you make your decision.
I guess it's convenient in that sense. I couldn't tell you the names of
more
than three of the women. And maybe that's just because it was a tight six-episode package.
Exactly.
By comparison, we have watched roughly 90 episodes of The Office in the last week and a half, because maternity, paternity leave is pretty fucking tight. Six episodes, I don't know. It takes me 8 episodes of Survivor to learn anybody's name.
I know, me too.
I can't believe not only how short a run this show was, and how successful it was, despite how short a run this show was. Like, the show was a zeitgeist. Like, it had 6-7 episodes, including the women's tell-all. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it immediately spiraled out into The Bachelorette with Trista, who was a contestant this season.
The next year, in 2003, yeah.
Like, they were ready to go.
Yeah. And it was not a good show. Like, this first season of The Bachelor, and maybe it was carried by the weight of how weird it was that there were 25 women dating one man and then they were going to get married, and you just had to watch it to see what happens, right? I think there were a lot of way scuzzier reality dating shows that we watched earlier this year that were sort of built on the back of that premise, that were like, oh, well, let's go even grosser than that, because if this is what people were talking about and this is what got people excited. And to The Bachelor and Bachelorette's credit, like, we give them a lot of shit, but the show is a lot more than that now.
Another difference is, so there are group dates, and are there single dates,
yeah.
But they don't get roses early on those dates.
They don't, nor do they receive the information about these dates on date cards.
Oh my gosh.
Holy
the boxes
shit. They get the fun boxes. Little boxes. They get fun little geocaches,
like big hat boxes full of themed artifacts that suggest what the date is going to be about.
Yeah,
that you can tell some production assistant spent hours like carefully compiling, and all the women do is they rip the top of that box off, they pull out the card, and then no attention is paid
to the box. Yeah. I would be surprised if the box made it to Trista's season. Yeah. I think they probably got rid of it by then.
So this very first night, 10 women go home out of the 25.
That's
so it's
so
like
many women.
It's like they almost cut it in half, which explains how they could do it in so few episodes.
And they keep this rate going for the next, like, I think the first three episodes, they get rid of pretty much half the crowd every time. Which, here's the thing. First of all, this is closer to the kind of clip that Bachelorette Canada moved at, which I think we can all agree was better. This was maybe a little intense because it was like, why did you even bring these 10 people here? Like, I don't know anything about these 10 people.
Yeah.
And you certainly didn't give me time. Was the show 2 hours or was it just one? I think it was just one.
Gosh, I didn't even notice.
I didn't even notice either, but I think these were 1 hour long episodes. And so, like, in 2 hours, it's hard for me to get to know 25 women. In one, no. So, like, these 10 women are like, well, there goes Freckles one and curly red hair and
Aqua Dress
two, Electric Boogaloo. Like, there's no hope for me to learn the names of these women. Like,
no first impression rose.
Nope. No first. Very, very scant rose delivery. Very few roses. Bonus roses.
Yeah. So already into episode two, we're pretty much cut in half. Which.
Anything stand out to you else about episode one? That's
no.
The thing. Like, it wasn't very good. Here's another broad thing that we should talk about. And I think it's the reason why I had a hard time, like, really connecting with this season. I mean, I connected with it because I was so fascinated by it because it was so weird and different. But, like, if this had come out in 2002, I don't know. I might have loved it. I was a trash person probably back then.
I would have loved it. I totally would have. I still, as we were watching the first season, I was like, this is scratching that itch for me.
Well, here's the thing that why it didn't scratch the itch for me, and this is going to sound like the biggest double standard ever, because it's something I talk about as being like a fault for the show, but there were no like characters, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that this necessarily has to be that like kayfabe, handwritten storylines for everybody. I'm just saying, like, the contestants that I remember, your Jubilees and your your Carlys, and like all of these people had character, and this character was delivered in through all of these different methods.
Well, that's why, like, so when we watched The Women Tell All, they were trying to kind of set some of that up as an afterthought.
There was a woman whose name I can't remember, done, who was like, and now the woman that everybody's been talking about, Joy Chun.
And we were like,
who the fuck is,
who is that?
And it showed her, like, getting too drunk at a party, and, like, she passed out in the bathroom and, like, danced around, and everybody was like, we love you, John Chan. And it's like, who the fuck is that? I don't know who the fuck you're talking about.
It was almost like it didn't occur to them until they decided to do A Women Tell All that they were like, oh, we need to establish some drama.
But we watched this whole season in 72 hours, and I don't know who the fuck that is. I watched this episode on Saturday. What are you talking about? Who is that?
Yeah.
The women didn't stand out, and it's not a weakness of the women. It's a weakness of how the show was sort of structured and presented, and maybe it needs I can't believe the things I'm saying on this episode of this podcast, but maybe it needs 2 hours to get that shit across, you know what I mean? And it certainly needs better. The behind the scenes interviews were the pits, those little in the moment interviews with the with the Bachelor. And do the contestants get those? I guess sometimes, but it would always be setting up the scene or talking about what you're literally seeing. And if this sounds like the same way that they're handled now, like I'm describing it poorly, but it's like, my parents had a real problem with her, and so they sat me down to talk about it, and during that conversation I was just really unsure about their feelings. Cut to the fucking next scene is literally exactly that. There was no like reaction to the things that were happening. There was only like, here's a scene you're about to see. It was pretty dope.
The only time I enjoyed it is I feel like Alex got some of those in the moments where he got to kind of explore his own discomfort with the process, which I kind of enjoyed watching. Like, just like he'd go on group dates, for example, and he would be like, man, all these women hate me right now. Like, we are on this date and they know I just took this other woman out, and they are just fuming and it's really uncomfortable for me.
There was a lot of very frank disdain between the contestants and The Bachelor, and between The Bachelor and the process. The last couple episodes are kind of a death march because nobody wants to get engaged. Yeah. Absolutely nobody in this process wants to get engaged.
Yeah.
Because again, like, the novelty was novel for them too, right? Like, you go into this show now, you know what the fuck is up. You when you go into that casting room, you know full well that you could come out of it 6 months later somebody's fiance. That was not the case here. And so it was like, oh shit, we're doing this?
It's
for marriage,
like,
for life?
It's almost like after this season, they had people fill out comment cards that said, select the date range you'd be comfortable getting engaged. And it was like 5 to 7 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, 11 to 13 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they decided to extend the season to just that length.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's very clear that, you know, what, 6 weeks or whatever is not enough.
I remembered a name. There's a woman named Shannon who makes it fairly far.
Yeah, she's like final three.
And of this 6-episode season, three of the episodes, she fucking hates Alex's guts. And he keeps her around, and they just go on these acrimonious dates where they just like hate each other's fucking guts.
She's kind of most notable because she's kind of the first virginal character, in that she doesn't want to kiss, she doesn't want to talk about anything sexual, she's not comfortable with anything sexual on the show, and he is coming from a very opposite point of view. And she's just openly hostile anytime he tries to bring it up.
And she's extremely jealous of the fact that he is dating other women. And again, like, I can't fault her for this because it's the first season of the show.
Yeah.
You don't have that baked into your mind when you come out for it.
Yeah.
To this season's credit, everything felt super duper real. And I'm sure it was, like, slightly manufactured, but, like, these things, when they sprung the fantasy suites on them, they didn't know that these were coming. Their reactions to that were real as hell. And I found that, like, really, really genuinely interesting.
Yeah.
If like, a really good, solid, like, romance story had come out of this, I think I would have, like, loved this season. It didn't, it kind of petered out there at the end, but, like, everything felt, like, very, very authentic and super duper clumsy, which I think only goes to, you know, back up its authenticity.
So I want to skip to episode 3.
Okay, halfway through the season. You just skipped 1/6 of the episodes with dates on them.
Episode 2 is where they go to Vegas, and not a lot happens.
This is where he starts in on... When does him and Amanda's unique relationship start out?
I think that's episode 3.
Okay, let's get into episode 3, because another thing we need to talk about, Alex, is that he is... horny as hell, and he's not ashamed to say it.
Yeah, so the only thing that happens in episode 2 is they go to Vegas, and Shannon kind of becomes a front runner on that date.
She gets a jewelry date, for lack of a better term, where they go to like a fancy dinner situation, and she gets this.
That's like, actually episode 3.
Oh, is it? Shit. Oh, yeah. Never mind. Spoiler.
So episode 3, this is interesting. So it's not unusual for the bachelor's friends to show up on campus. But what's unusual about this is that Alex's friends are a couple, and they're going to live on campus for the week.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to ask questions of the women and pick their favorite women's. Pick their favorite women's.
Uh-huh.
And then be available for questions. Chris Harrison's like, take advantage of this time, ladies, because these two people know Alex very well. And so they're just kind of trapped on...
Trapped is a great word.
On site.
Imprisoned. These two are constantly holding hands, and I think for strength, they need this.
I was surprised that Griffin made a big deal out of that, because Griffin's a big hand holder.
Maybe not on television constantly, not all the time. No, hold hands, chase your bliss, stand in your truth, stand in your love. It was just like funny to watch these in the moment interviews, and they had like 30 of them across this one episode, and in each one those paws were interlocked as if they were like exchanging nutrients through their fleshy stalks.
What's cool, I enjoyed, is so the friends, they ask compatibility questions of the women that are there, and the compatibility questions include questions like, do you vote, and which is more important, mercy or justice?
This was crazy. It was like, what are you gonna do with this information? Sorry, yeah. Dude, she likes justice. I know you love mercy, bro. It's a tough beat. You got to send her home. I know you're a mercy man. And she said justice. So,
yeah. So it was just like.
Wasn't there a sex question too? Like.
Oh.
Probably.
There was. I can't remember. Maybe how important is it in a relationship? Oh, yeah.
And everybody was like super duper important, because they know what Alex needs. They know what he craves. That's that carnal touch. That carnal touch from women's. Henry signing off. Carnal touch from women's.
So this is when the women get picked for dates. And the women that get picked are Amanda and Shannon and Trista.
This is the final three.
Yeah.
Spoiler. If you remember three names from this whole conversation, remember those three.
So the first date is with Amanda. And these two have a physical chemistry.
Here, Alex is a 31-year-old man. He has no idea. I'm going to sound really gross here, but I really want to stress that this is what Alex sort of was whenever he was around Amanda. And it was just like any conversation they had, he'd be like, so how do you boobs? How do I get them? What do you think they touch like? Breasts.
Amanda, it tells us in episode 1, she's from a very small town in Kansas, but she's very comfortable with her sexuality and tells the viewer right away, like, I like to I don't know, be playful, let's say, and that she has sexual experiences that include purchasing a trapeze. So we know she's down for anything.
Awesome. Great.
And Alex cannot handle
it. Alex can't fucking handle this shit.
Alex tells us, the viewer, and Griffin made me write this down word for word, that Amanda has a, quote, creative sexuality that no one has ever appreciated. And here I am getting it like a gift.
He said this, me, Rachel, and Henry all barfed at the same time, because that's the craziest shit anybody's
we
ever
paused
said.
It, rewound it, just to make sure
here,
that
I got
could
you
get
something.
The,
what
the
is this?
Wording.
Oh, happy holidays. Unravel, paper sound. Oh, is this your creative sexuality that you're giving to me like a gift? thank you. Nobody's appreciated this before, but I appreciate it very much.
They
thank
go,
you for the gift.
For their date, they go to like a Japanese-style restaurant.
They look dope as fuck.
Where, you know, they'd sit on the ground and there would be low tables. And they just decide to move the little pillows and just full on, like, go at
this
it.
This was, I couldn't help but watch this scene and think of the great, great Terrace House show that we just watched and all of the, like, nice Japanese meals they went to. And just, like, we talked about on during Terrace House, and I felt kind of shitty for talking about it like this, but, like, oh, this an American TV show would be so different. And here we are in, like, a really nice, fancy Japanese restaurant, and these two are just finger blasting each other on the ground nonstop. No joke. Like, it was, this show was so horny. Season one was so horny. It was so horny all the time. We watch this show and we think, like, oh, nowadays, wow, this is a horny show. No, knowing that the fantasy suites is coming at the end gives you, like, I'm going to be horny on week 9, so I shouldn't be horny now. And without that fucking, like, goalpost in your mind, Alex is just like, I'm going to be horny constantly in this nice Japanese restaurant, where these nice Japanese waiters and waitresses are coming in and they're trying to serve us food, but they can't because we're doing it.
Yeah, there actually is a scene where a waitress tries to come in with the food and then sees them on the ground and kind of starts to back out and then doesn't know whether she should continue to serve them or give them their privacy.
They're serving each other.
It's uncomfortable.
It's rough stuff. I'm not exaggerating. 75% of the conversations that these two have together are Alex just being like, what do they rub like? They go, there's a day where they're in New York, right? And they're on like a sightseeing bus.
Yeah,
And it's literally just like, so how did you get your breasts? And she's like, well, let me tell you about my breasts. He's like, breasts, great.
Yeah, so she's had a breast enhancement, and he feels totally within his right to just ask her all the details about it. What size she was before, what size she is now, why she decided to do it, how she feels about them.
I don't want to sound prudish, and I don't want to sound like I'm judging Amanda in any way. I'm just saying, like, it was crazy how horny this dude was.
If you contrast him and, let's say, Sean Lowe, who was the born again virgin,
it's insane. And I feel like this show is definitely, it gets gross sometimes, and I hope we are good enough about calling it out when it gets gross, but like, it almost feels like they want The Bachelor to be a little bit more honorable, I guess, than this these days. Like, he is supposed to be this like romance movie hero who is virtuous to some degree, and
it's what we always talk about. It's that like unspoken code of conduct that everybody's supposed to follow.
Yeah,
you know, and that like the women inherently know, and the Bachelor inherently knows of, this is how the show works, this is what's appropriate. And anytime anyone steps outside of that, they get like a really bad edit. Yeah. So they're very careful.
Like Juan Pablo, who definitely deserved it, but like he was kind of a sleazy dude who said that, like, he says, I love fucking you to a woman when she says, I love you. Like he gets a bad edit from that. But like otherwise, you are supposed to be this virtuous white knight. And like, this dude did not come off like that
I wouldn't say that Alex got a bad edit.
No, I don't think so either.
Interesting.
No, I just think like he didn't know what to be, because there hadn't been a Bachelor before.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, your boobs are very cool.
The other thing that happens, and this is the first solo date, they go get massages and they rub each other on their very first date.
Hello. Well, I mean, there's 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Dude goes on a total of like maybe 14 dates across all of these episodes.
So his next solo date is with Trista, and I can't help but think he was very deliberate in choosing his dates, because the woman he is very sexually attracted to gets the massage date. Trista gets a let's cook a meal together at home.
Yeah.
And they make pasta, and it is a very 180 degree difference.
Trista's great. This actually made me kind of want to watch Bachelorette.
I know. I kind of want to watch it
because
too.
Trista and whoever she ends up with, I don't know.
Ryan.
Spoiler.
Well, everybody knows.
I guess
they got married. They got their own marriage special.
And they're still married today. Like they were the second or third, I think, Bachelor season 2 came.
They renewed their vows too through the franchise.
Exactly. Like they are the original success story for this show. And like she's great. She is definitely the best contestant on the show. And it was smart thinking, I guess, like, of the creators of this show to be like, you know, it'd be cool. Let's do a gender swap version of this. Let's do Bachelorette, and let's use this woman who everybody really, really loved.
Yeah. And then our first group date is a horse date.
Yes.
Where they all ride horses and all the women are miserable.
Just hate his guts.
And then Shannon, as we mentioned earlier, gets a one-on-one where she gets an evening gown and Harry Winston jewelry.
Fuck that shit.
So no Neil Lane yet.
Get that ring pop gashapon looking piece of shit jewelry out of my house. This is a Neil Lane home. Rachel wears lots of Neil Lane every day. She's wearing the pendant, the Heart of the Ocean pendant from Titanic. Neil Lane did that.
If you hold it up in the right light, you can see Neil Lane's face, and he winks at you.
And he winks, and he's like, make a wish. The ocean shall make it so by Neptune's beard. It shall be so.
I have to be careful, though, because it, it's kind of cheaply made, and so it turns my skin orange.
Turns your skin orange. Also, there's sort of a monkey paw situation with these wishes.
That was kind of a play on how Neil Lane is always orange.
I didn't get it. Mean.
I'm sorry.
It's Christmas Day.
No, it's not. And then it's time for the
Invitation Night, which I mentioned earlier, and I feel like you didn't really think about this, but it sounds like some sort of vampire ceremony. Welcome to the Invitation Night.
And there's video messages. So all the remaining women recorded little video messages for Alex, which is something they also used to do a few years ago. Yeah,
they
stopped.
They ape this on, oh my God, what's that show that we watch on Lifetime? The only Lifetime show that we watched.
Oh, Unreal?
Yeah, they aped this on Unreal, and they made fun of it on Burning Love, and I never got it, because I think the first season I watched, they had long retired this practice.
Yeah.
But pretty much every episode, once they got down to, like, a reasonable number of women, because dude can't watch 25 fucking videos, they would have these video pleas, and most of them, like, I get why they stopped doing them, because most of them were super lame.
Yeah.
It was like, we had a great time, and I hope that you'll just think about our future together, because I am, and, that's it. See you tonight. I love you. Just kidding.
So this is episode 3. He has to narrow it down to 4 women on the third episode.
They go to hometowns on week 4.
Note, he had 3 one-on-ones this week. I think this must be when they decided you could give out a rose on a one-on-one. Because, of course, he picks the 3 women he went on one-on-one dates with.
Yeah.
And then there's just one spot left for a rando.
He goes to a rando Rhonda? Was it Rhonda? No.
Kim.
Rhonda goes home and Rhonda has
the
freak out.
Anxiety attack.
Yeah.
Which they try and play up a lot. There's like shots of ambulances, the whole thing.
Okay, so a few other things that we should talk about that are like, we celebrated when they said them for the first time. So we get the first, like, in the preview for the whole season, you get the ambulance edit. You get the, somebody's gonna die. Someone flies, someone dies. You get that in the preview for the whole season. No, the woman just has, like, an anxiety attack, which is serious, but, like, they make it seem like she suffers a gunshot wound or something.
Yeah, we don't actually even know that the ambulance ever shows up. They just show her breathing heavy and a production person talking to her.
During the Women Tell All, one of the women is talking about the remaining women who are still in the house. And they say, Trista, you know, she's a great girl. And I really believe she's here for the right reasons. And it's like, oh, shit. That's the first time.
Yeah.
That's the first time you said that. What was the other one? There was another thing that, like, somebody said that is like, a mainstay. Obviously, Chris Harrison says, when you're ready, please step forward and accept your rose. And it's like, oh, bud, you don't have to say that second part. You can just stop it when you're ready. It's going to become like a time-honored catchphrase that some people are going to use as their podcast sign-off.
The other thing they do in episode 3, I just wanted to point out real quick. So we mentioned the problematic staging of episode 1, where it was 25 women shoulder to shoulder. By episode 3, they're sitting on couches.
Yeah, very lazy.
So they, like, kind of all have their own seating area, and they're just kind of hanging out, waiting for that rose, real informal-like, on, like, little coffee shop couches.
Yeah. Anything else for episode 3? I can't
remember.
That's
it. That's it for episode 3.
So here's another thing that we should talk about, like, another surprise. If you were on this show, you probably didn't know, and you as the viewer definitely didn't know that their hometowns were a thing. And so now, like, if you're baked into this, like, novelty of, like, he's dating so many women and he's going to get engaged, and now he has to meet their families. This is crazy.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how, like, there had to be dozens of moments like that during this show that I just didn't appreciate because, like, I've seen it happen a dozen times.
Yeah, because I mean, both you and I started watching after the show was established. So we just kind of took it at face value of like, oh, this must be how it works.
Let me tell you what I remember about the hometowns. Fucking nothing. Nothing at all. I do remember that this was the worst, like, in the moment interview offender where it was just like, so I went to Kenosha and I met the whole family and, you know, they gave me some pretty hard questions and I did my best to answer them. Cut to just like 8 boring ass minutes of that. I will say in general, the families just weren't fucking having it. Like, no. It seemed like everybody, you're gonna do, sorry. Marriage?
Alex is weary. Alex openly complains about the breakneck schedule of running across the country to these various homes.
When he goes to meet Amanda's family, who is, like, obviously his front runner the whole time, he is just, like, he says, dead silent.
He says he only got 3 hours of sleep.
First of all, fuck you. I would kill for 3 hours of sleep. Are you kidding me?
And so he's just not on his game. So he just kind of sits there and shovels food in his mouth and doesn't even try.
And her dad is like, is he sick? What's wrong with him?
So just to quickly go through. So we go to Kim's house. I don't know anything about Kim.
No, nobody knows anything about Kim.
Kim lives in Phoenix.
Kim was a psychological experiment to see if anybody would notice if they just added a woman to this show.
The thing that was remarkable about Kim is that they go to her house and she has a room of taxidermied animals.
Oh, God. Okay, I remember Kim now.
Yeah, that her dad has murdered. And her dad very politely asks Alex what his hobbies are, if not hunting. And Alex says that he's a swimmer, which I thought was cute.
The hunting of the water. Do you mean fishing? What are you talking about?
We also get a fun interaction between Alex and one of Kim's nieces, or I guess nephew.
Holy
where
shit.
Alex is trying to lift this nephew by his arm and practically dislocates his shoulder.
It's like literally like he's deadlifting this child by the wrist.
He's telling the camera, he's like, you know, you always want to be good with kids in front of a family you're trying to impress. And it just shows him over and over.
Not like that, Lenny. Put him the fuck down.
So that's Kim. Trista is from St. Louis, and she takes him to her high school, which I was really trying to figure out what high school, because I'm also from St. Louis. I couldn't tell.
Oh.
But this is when Alex starts to be more candid about Trista and says things like, it drives me nuts that she's not interested. Her whole thing is like, she is not...
She says, I'm in like with you, but I don't know that I'll get there.
She admits this is a problem for her. Like, she is very careful with how she shows her feelings.
In the penultimate episode, she says, like, I don't want to get engaged to you. Yeah. I like you a lot, but, like, thinking about getting engaged to you makes me want to barf. That's crazy. No way.
Like, compared to Amanda, who's very clear, like, I'm into you. Trista's very much like, oh, yeah, I mean, there are other things I could be doing, and I guess this isn't a bad way to spend my time.
Yeah.
Which he loves. That is like what keeps him hanging on, is that she is very cautious.
His decision-making process, though, is inscrutable, though, because Kim, they don't seem to have any connection at all. Him and Shannon have a straight-up hateful, like, watch this episode. Watch the Hometowns episode. If you only watch one episode, just watch that, because I've never seen anything like it. Shannon's family, not a big fan of Alex, if memory serves. But more than that, like, she's like, I can't believe you're doing this with all of the women. This is so awful.
And unlike Trista, so Trista, we know, just maybe she's just like this in relationships. Shannon shows us that she's capable of love in her relationship with her dog.
She gets the fuck up out of the room. She's like, here's my parents. Let's sit down. Never mind. I'm going to leave the room with you, leaving you alone with my parents. And I'm going to go play with a dog outside. And then, like, he's trying to talk to her, and they take this dog outside, and they're, like, sitting on a bench, and he's like, so tell me about, and then the dog starts to run off, and she's like, Trixie, get back here! Like, goes to chase off the dog, and Alex is like,
She, like, strands him with her parents and goes outside to play with the dog. She's like, hey, these are my parents, I'm gonna go be with my dog. And then Alex makes awkward small talk with the dad, without any buffer at all. Like, just
it was so odd. So in this for the final four, you have a woman who is really into you, and you are at least very physically into her. You have a woman, Kim, who just like, there doesn't seem to be any connection at all. You have Trista, who is actively telling you she does not want to get married to you. And then you have Shannon, who wants to play with a dog instead of hang out with you. How is this your final four?
I know.
This is crazy. That's like,
we were really confused.
And then at the end, can we talk about the end of the episode?
Yeah.
He fucking keeps Shannon. He gets rid of Kim. It's like you didn't have any connection with her. You have an enemy in Shannon.
So the thing that gets really hostile with Shannon is Alex, when they're after the family date, they're in the limo together, and Alex knows that Shannon doesn't want to...
him at all. Doesn't want to talk to him or be around him.
Shannon doesn't want to be physical in their relationship yet, and he respects it, but he tries to ask her about it, and she's like, I'm not going to talk about it. There are things that I'm not going to answer, and that is one of them. And he's trying to kind of figure out why she feels that way and why it's important to her, and she's like, I'm not comfortable. We're not talking about it. You know that I'm uncomfortable right now. I can't believe you're asking me about this.
Which is, to be fair, interesting, right? Like, now you get to the final 12 and it's all Amanda's. It's all people like that he's into, and she's like, I don't think Alex had a hard decision the entire show. And sure, it was 6 episodes, so he didn't have to make that many decisions. But like, I think the woman he picked is like the only one, right? The only one that he had any sort of spark with whatsoever. And I think, again, this is a testament to expectations. It's a testament to the casting process. But just like, most of these women didn't feel it. Nobody turned down the rose, which Chris Harrison pointed out during the Women Tell All.
Yeah, every ceremony, Chris Harrison would say, I want you to know you have the power here. If you don't want to accept it, you can say no.
And during the Women Tell All, he said, I'm to all 25 of the women who gathered back in, and he said, why didn't any of you refuse your roses? And like 4 of the women were like, we would have, but we were sent home that week. If he had given me a rose the week that I went home, then I would have turned it down. Because like, they just weren't, it just like... they weren't feeling it. And I don't know. That's interesting. It definitely feels like there's a little bit more. I don't know if it's more drama or less drama, because you know he's always got the easy option to send home. And we talk about like, oh God, it's so boring when like they it has to be, oh, I'm in love with the final two every single time. But like, I don't know if that's better or worse than what we got this year, which is just like, my final two is a woman I'm really into and a woman who's not very into me. Like, yeah. Oh, I wonder who he's going to pick.
Yeah.
It was not, there was no tension whatsoever pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
But he kept Shannon over Kim. And it's like, wouldn't you at least rather keep a woman around who like you are neutral to rather than one that you are just going to fight with the other time? And sure enough, in the next episode, the Fantasy Suites episode, it is bitter between the two of them.
Well, you know what? He says why he gets rid of Kim. He said that Kim's family talked about how easygoing she was and how she would go along with anything, and they'd never seen her like fired up about anything. And he says that was his reason for not selecting her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. So he would pick someone who doesn't like him over.
Maybe that. He knew Fantasy Suites were coming up the next episode, and he wanted to pick somebody who would just not like do it, and it wouldn't be a big deal, and it wouldn't be like a slight against his reputation. I wonder at what point during the show Alex realized, like, I need to go into hiding after this.
I don't know. I was really surprised because they sell him at the beginning as this like distinguished intellectual, you know, eligible bachelor. And then he comes on the show.
It's just a fuck boy.
Yeah. It was it was a weird choice on his part.
They just didn't know, a blanket statement. They didn't know how to cast this show. They just didn't.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's cool that these people were real. And I think right now we're talking about the extremes, right? You want to talk about JoJo's season. You want to talk about Ben's season. It was on one side of the extreme where just like it was pretty phony for the most part. And a lot of it felt super contrived. And then the ending was the same both times, where it's like, I'm so in love with both of them and I told them, oops, what am I going to do? And I suspect that will probably be the case with Nick's season two, maybe. I don't know. And on the other side of the spectrum, we have this, which is just like, these real people aren't in love with me. Oh, well. And I think there's probably a middle ground in there somewhere that hopefully they could move back towards a little bit. Because it was cool that it was like fairly real reactions to these things and nothing felt like too phony baloney.
So episode 5 is the fantasy suite episode. And we don't have to talk in too much detail about it, but I will say that all three women go to 3 different cities, which is unusual.
A lot of travel.
Amanda goes to New York, as we mentioned. Shannon goes to Tahoe, and Trista goes to Hawaii. And I will say that it is clear with Amanda that they do have intercourse.
Is it?
Well, because they order that Sex in the Sheets dessert. You remember?
No, yeah.
Are you not paying attention to this part?
I guess not.
They
Sex in the Sheets dessert? Like, they just, like, pull down the duvet and they just, like, smear a bunch of, like, pudding and stuff
It comes
in
with a plastic sheet and chocolate sauce.
What?
I don't know. Yeah, you must have missed this.
Okay. I've been playing a lot of Stardew Valley, I guess, this past week, and I must have been, like, deep on a farming journey. And wasn't paying attention when they ordered plastic sheets to have sexual intercourse on.
So the fantasy suite is not gussied up in the way it is now. It's just a hotel suite. And we watch them get there and they close the doors. And then there's this kind of weird security camera footage that we're watching after the doors are closed. And then Amanda tells us that Alex wanted to order her something. And he orders a Sex in the Sheets dessert, which comes with chocolate and caramel and a plastic sheet.
Can you fucking, first of all, ew, gross. Not to be a prude again, but do you really want that much stickiness involved in the act of lovemaking? Do you really want to get that yucky during it? No, we should, No, of course not.
So what if you were going to bring food into the bedroom, what would be?
A plate of nachos for after.
Just cooling on the windowsill.
Gotta keep them separated. No, I mean, I would have a warming drawer in my nightstand.
You say you could proof your nachos?
How dope would it be? Just like finish the act and then roll over and then I slide open the nightstand drawer and it's just full of heated nachos and I just reach down and it's just all nachos all the way down and I just eat them out of the drawer. That's the dream. Not I want to have caramel on and around me. Are you kidding me?
You probably would still need the plastic sheet though.
Can you imagine the room service technician who has to bring that shit? Here you go. Sounds like you've got a fun Wednesday night planned. Sticky mess. Yeah.
There was...
Every hotel had to hire a pervert just for that, just to make that one delivery.
There was... Okay, now, so I don't know if I misremembered this. Anyone who watches episode 5 of The Bachelor season 1 can let me know. But after Amanda tells the story, I'm pretty sure they put up a Polaroid photo of her in which it is clear that she has chocolate all over her face.
What?
As in like an after.
Oh, God.
Like here's a photo from me from
after.
Was
I asleep during this? I can't believe I would miss out on this.
I don't know. Maybe my screams weren't loud enough when I was despairing this information.
Shannon
and Alex go on a ski date. And they do finally kiss on this date. And then they go to a hot tub and Shannon shares that she's very uncomfortable in a swimsuit on camera. And Alex tells us, the viewer, that this was a ridiculous concern because her body was, quote, flawless.
Her reaction to the reaction of all the women to the fantasy suite was interesting because, again, first time learning that there was even a fantasy suite. Shannon's was interesting because she said, I knew something like this was going to happen. Yeah. I knew it.
And the date turns immediately. So the fantasy date cards still come from Chris Harrison, even season 1.
If you choose to forgo your individual.
The language is the same.
Exactly the same.
Which is incredible. And when Shannon receives this card, she is irate because she's being put in this position that she can't possibly agree to.
Not only that, that she has this dawning realization that you're doing it with the other two women. I know it beyond a shadow of a doubt. You are going to have sex with these other two women.
She's like, wouldn't it be funny if my card said Amanda or Trista's name on it? Like,
she knew, and she was furious. Yeah. And like, this was maybe the most interesting thing that happened the whole run. Because again, we talk about like the reaction of this stuff being a surprise and it being a first time thing and being new. And we talk about now, like, I have a hard time even now. And God, I'm sounding like such a prude during this episode.
I know. I feel like what we're talking about more is the contrast to later seasons.
Right. But like, we watch the seasons now and it's like, I think I would have a problem if it was, if we're supposed to suspend our disbelief and believe like it's all really real, real, real. The thought of like, oh, yeah, let's go and have a private night together and I'll just be cool with the fact that you're doing this with two other people this week. I would have a hard time. I think I would have a hard time with that. And I think the average person would probably have a hard time with that. If you were into this person and you knew that this week they were probably going to hook up with a couple of other folks, that would be a bummer, to put it lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only time I've seen, because it's new and they unexpected, a person react in step with that. Like, oh, you're going to hook up with two other people? Well, fuck this and you.
Well, we saw some of the men have trouble with that in Bachelorette Canada.
Well, dudes are the worst.
Oh, okay.
No, I guess that's true. But that's Canada. It's two different things.
Okay. So yeah, so they decide to walk to the suite anyway.
He's like, let me just show you the suite.
But she says, you know, that it ruined dinner. And so Alex tries to get the cameras to leave so he can talk to Shannon one-on-one and patch things up. And he tells us that they, quote, got through it that night.
Just like you want. How was your date? Really romantic. We got through it.
But yeah, things are beyond repair at this point with those two.
And she just hates his guts. Why did you keep her around?
She hates him, yeah. And at a certain point, he says, like, I just was always trying to fix things with Shannon.
He's like, at one point at the end, he says, after he sends her home, spoiler, she goes home third, in third place. He says, like, we went on four dates, and she got really angry at me three times across four dates.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, yes. Yeah.
So finally is the Hawaii date with Trista, and this is a treat. This goes down in history as maybe one of my favorite fantasy suite dates, because Alex gets terrible.
Oh, yes.
Food poisoning, maybe? I don't know what it is, but at a certain point he has to leave the date because he is so violently ill.
Did you watch this season of Unreal where one of the women gets poisoned and has really, really bad diarrhea during one of the dates? And you thought, like, what if this was real life? That is essentially what we were working with here.
So at first it seems like he's just airsick because they're taking a helicopter ride and he starts vomiting into the airsick bag in the helicopter.
He is not discreet like my boy Armon. He does not know how to handle his biz. I mean, again, they're in a helicopter, so there's not a lot of places to hide.
Yeah, so he starts puking in the bag, and we all think, you know, oh, okay, he's just for some reason nauseous while in a helicopter. Maybe that's a thing that can happen. But then later in the date, it comes on him again, and he becomes bedridden.
Right after they have like kind of an uncomfortable conversation, right? Like, aren't they talking about how she doesn't want to get engaged? They're talking about something, and she's like, "It's the conversation is not going his way," and he's like, "If you'll excuse me, I need to make a phone call."
Yeah, he's like, I need to check on something for later in the day.
And she even says, like, oh, okay. Like, you're going to go spew, bud.
Yeah, and so he is bedridden. Trista very kindly comes to his room and hangs out with him when it becomes clear he is not going to be able to leave. And that's pretty much, yeah. I think the next day they try and salvage it and go and get massages, but it is not a fantasy suite kind of
No, unless you have a weird fantasy. And then at the rose ceremony, Shannon finally is sent home. And she is actually the only person, I think, the whole time who does the walking to the limo and then turns on her heel and comes back and says, like, yo, what the fuck? Why'd you do me like this?
Yeah. So she's very icy when she gets eliminated. But then she decides she wants to know what's going on. And he says, you know, we want really different things. And
this will be better for you. Okay,
yeah, like I don't want to make your life hard. And
I don't know. He seemed like he had a free pass to really tell the truth here and be like, we don't get along at all. Yeah. You hate my guts.
And this is where Shannon tells us that Alex is weak and that she thinks she scared him and that she's better off.
And that he makes her sick just to look at him.
Like, yeah.
Wow. God.
And then episode 6 is Women Tell All. And we watched like half of it.
We watched most of it, actually. And it was, I mean, it's the usual stuff. Chris Harrison doing his thing, hot seat.
Do you remember how many bottles of champagne they said?
Like 112?
They put up little trivia factoids about this season of The Bachelor and said that, yeah, there was over 100 bottles of champagne that were used in 7 episodes. So I can only imagine what it is now.
Yeah, I would have to do some math to figure out what the bottle per woman per day ratio was. And Alex was boozing up too, I'm sure. I can't really think of anything else that happened during Women Tell All. There was that one call out where they're like, everybody's favorite wacko, Snorsh, whose name I can't remember.
Yeah, and they also talked about her breast enhancement, which
yeah.
I was like, what is going on, guys? Like, we don't need to know. We don't need to know about this. And then, do you want to talk about the finale?
No, let's skip it. I mean, not very much stuff happened.
It's Trista and Amanda. They meet the parents.
Meet the parents. You remember when the cat uses the toilet?
Ben Stiller
is in it. And here's the thing: Cara and Robert De Niro, they don't like each other very much at all. And Robert De Niro is like, there's an army.
Is that your Robert De Niro?
It's me, Robert De Niro. I want you to take this lie detector test. I love you. I love you, son.
I think he's CIA.
I was in the FBI, so I hate you. I hate your guts. I love my daughter. I can't wait to meet the Fockers in the sequel. You remember the sequel, Meet the Fockers?
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman.
They think Dustin Hoffman's in it, and he's like, oh, I love my son. It's me, Dustin Hoffman.
Isn't there a third one that's like Little Fockers?
It's like Little Fockers, and it's like, I'm a baby voiced by Bruce Willis. Do you remember the baby voiced by Bruce Willis in Meet the Babies? How much sleep does the audience think I've had today? Oh, it was a bad night last night.
Yeah, we're not sleeping at night anymore.
It's just a new thing we're trying. I am watching like 7 episodes of OC each evening time.
Yeah.
Each early AMs.
Yeah.
It's finale time. We get these last two women. They just like go and they meet his parents, and his parents are like, please God, don't do this.
Yeah,
please,
the parents
son, I love
are
you.
Like, please don't get married.
Please don't get married. I love you. This is stupid. Please, Alex,
these
don't
women
throw
are,
it away.
These women are very nice, but you don't love them. Please don't marry
please
them.
Please don't marry them. Please. Hey, are you women Catholic? I've been thinking about getting back in. One of them said, I think about getting back into the Catholic game. Yeah. You know, I've been looking up what the Catholic Church has been doing lately, and I think, like, I gotta get me a piece of that. Uh-oh. Well, baby, we have, like, 5 minutes.
Okay, so Amanda talks about her annulment, which mm-hmm. is something we haven't mentioned yet. Amanda had been married, but got it annulled.
And Alex talks about, like, well, thank God it wasn't a divorce. Thank God it was an annulment and not a divorce. I'm like, really, dog?
Yeah.
What's it matter?
And then he has one more date with each woman. And usually these dates are like on the current season, very romantic and exotic, but with Trista, they get, pizza delivery, and with Amanda, they get Chinese food takeout.
Into this. I'm fucking into this. I want more dates that are like, this is what it'll kind of be like a bit.
Yeah. Cause they just sit and talk.
They just sit and talk and that's it. Yeah. I like that a lot. This way, and during Trista's little, date, she finally said, like, I'm actually really into you, and I've just kind of just now realized, like, I do care about you a lot.
Yeah, and I could see us getting engaged.
Yeah. And Alex is like, what the fuck? You said you didn't want it. Because I think at this point you knew it wasn't going to be Trista, and it was going to be an easy send home. But now that you've said that, like, shit.
And Amanda actually says on their date that she is falling in love with him. So she goes one step further and is like, yeah, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready. You could do it now. You could do it tomorrow. I'm in love with you.
At this point, Alex is getting a little bit gun-shy. There's a ring purchasing scene, not at Neil Lane.
Yeah,
again.
Harry Winston again.
Garbage gems, low carrot. Or high carrot, what's good? Is high carrot good or low carrot? Is that golf or...
I think the more carrots, the better.
Shit. But, like, after the conversation with his parents, he's like, ooh, I don't know about getting engaged. And Trisha's like, oof, I really don't want to get engaged. And Amanda's like, I would love to get engaged right now.
Yeah.
And so they have these dates. And then, guys, the finale, the climax to this season, this television show, which birthed a zeitgeist and a wide, long-running franchise.
And a very popular podcast.
Very popular podcast. Huge industry-establishing show. Genre-defining show. The end of it is the fucking worst thing I've ever seen. It is the worst denouement I have ever seen in any show fucking ever. It is ridiculous.
So Trista gets out of the limo first.
No build up to like, who's it gonna be for?
Well, even if you see them get ready.
We see them get ready, but even if you don't know like what's going to happen, reason would state like the first person that gets out is not going to be the one that is going to get the proposal, right? Like, even if you hadn't seen this show before, you had to think, like,
makes sense.
The show's not going to end with him proposing to a woman and then sending a woman home, although that would be crazy and fun. There's no, it's just like, and here she is. Here's Trista. Trista lost, everybody. The scene from the moment she steps foot out of the limo to when she gets back in the limo, I swear to God, maybe 53 seconds.
Yeah, she gets out and he greets her and she's kind of smiling at him and he says something nice and then immediately goes into, I don't think we're meant to spend our lives together.
And this was the tone of voice that we're working with here, and I'm going to try to replicate it as much as I can. Trista, I think you're a really great girl, and obviously you have a lot of really great qualities, and we had a ton of fun together, and I think, you know, you would make a good partner for somebody someday. I don't think that we're supposed to be together, but, like, literally that.
Yeah.
Like,
and her face, like, you can see it dawn on her what's happening. But it's so fast. Like, she didn't even ask any questions. She doesn't even really react. She's just like,
because he shuts it down. Oh. He's like, and so I just don't think it's going to be us tonight.
Let me walk you out.
Let me walk you out. Like, they hug. Let me see you to your car. I'm not, if this scene lasted more than 2 minutes, I'll eat my fucking hat.
No emotion. Like, I didn't feel anything when I was watching it. It was like watching somebody check out at like a Sears.
It was like watching somebody check out at the Sears or a Home Depot. And then the proposal, this next scene with Amanda is also fairly brisk. And it's like, this was your payoff for the whole season of the first television show, which everybody loved and became extremely successful and spawned like five spinoffs?
Yeah, that's a good point. There's no romance.
This is the ending?
Yeah.
Everybody saw this and was like, good ending. I'm going to watch a million more hours of this. Thank you, please.
He said that he's finding himself falling in love with her, but he's going to hold on to the ring. He wants to propose once they've had time together in the outside world. He wants her to move to California. And then he, instead of getting on one knee to give her the ring, he gets on one knee to give her the final rose. And that's enough for Amanda. Amanda's happy. But it's definitely anticlimactic.
Because it's not a proposal. Again, that's crazy. This show, which was people were crazy about because he's dating 25 women and then he's going to get engaged? That's wild. Except he doesn't get engaged at the end. And y'all still, it was still a wild success? Yeah. I can't imagine how disappointed I would have been. I wanted to see people make a huge mistake here. And you didn't give me that huge mistake. And yet it still spawned this huge franchise. This would be like if Star Wars Episode 4 was like 45 minutes long and it ends with Luke shooting into the exhaust pipe and then the Death Star explodes off screen. And then Han Solo is like, pretty good job. Credits. Like, what? I loved that movie. I want to watch 12 more of those movies. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It was awful.
You know what I think it is? I think it's Trista. I think Trista was their secret sauce.
I think Trista was probably the secret sauce.
I think that she got just enough people to carry on into Bachelorette. And then I haven't watched Bachelorette season one, but I'm assuming the momentum from that is a little bit heavier.
Let's save it for the next like break we have, because now we're in it now. But the next break, I would love to watch Trista's season, because she was the highlight of this weird, a lot of things to enjoy, and I can definitely see, I just talked a bunch of yay, but like I can see why people thought it was at least novel and interesting and like water cooler conversation, right? And I can see definitely the connective tissue between this and all of the like weird, gross dating reality shows that this created, this genre that it created. But holy shit. And maybe it's just because it's gotten better, right? Like, Bachelor Nation makes this thing more fun. The winky, like, nods to Bachelor Nation that we get, and, like, the fact that somebody says right reasons every episode, like, the secret language of this show and the treatment of this show, like, has gotten pretty great. That didn't exist here. Like, maybe it's just because I know how different and better it is. I thought it sucked. Like, I thought it was so bad. I thought it was really, really bad. It was a criminal ending. Holy shit.
Man. Yeah, I mean, it was more like a social experiment this first season.
That's a good way of thinking about
it. Like, they weren't heavy on the romance because they didn't know what it was, really.
And now, and it's a complete polar opposite of today. I don't think it's the fact that he's dating all of these women, or she's dating all these men, and then they're going to get engaged maybe at the end. That's not why people are watching it anymore. People are watching it, I feel like, because the show is growing so much. The audience for this show is growing, like, astronomically, and I think it's because people know how to watch it now, and they watch it for the sport of it, and they watch it for, like, the meta, like, references and jokes of it, and they watch it for the characters. And that's what they talk about, is the characters, not like, can you believe how many women he's dating?
Yeah, exactly. It's not novel anymore. Like, the concept isn't novel.
And that's not bad. That's what the show is now, it's good that we're doing this right before this new season starts, because it really has been a revelation for, like, what the show is today. And that's what the show is, in that it is more akin to a soap opera with arcs and characters and very, very repetitive, like, predictable events and conflicts. And that's what people talk about. Not like, what if they get married? I don't think anybody really gives a shit. They just want to talk about the people on the show.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. So a lot of people have pointed this out in the Facebook group. ESPN now has a fantasy app for The Bachelor, which is essentially, it looks like just like a March Madness style bracket.
Yeah, it's different from the Rose Reckoner. So I think it's two ways of doing it, right? If you want a more lightweight, like, you don't want to keep, well, a Rose Reckoner doesn't force you to keep score. It does all the math and heavy lifting for you. But if you want to do more of a fantasy football approach, then Rose Reckoner's your jam.
Yeah, maybe if this is your first season, though, and you just want to pick women that you think you're going to make it to the end, then, and you want to be able to check it on your mobile device, I guess.
What makes it tricky is that fucking reality. Steve Dude will ruin it every time. And so, like, I feel like it's harder to win knowing the winner if you're doing the fantasy football style thing, because you can get some nasty, nasty points from some bad ladies and bad boys.
But if you're a devotee of week to week minutia, then definitely do it our way, which focuses on every kiss, you know, and every special moment,
Special second of this beautiful franchise, this beautiful 2 hour an episode, like 14, 13 episode a season, three seasons a year television property.
Speaking of which, next week, and I'm not sure when our episode will go up because of the holiday season.
Yeah, Rachel's folks are going to be in town. Maybe we get them in the studio and be like, what do you think of Alicia?
But we're going to talk about all the 30 women that are competing this season.
Oh, this will be great. Your parents can watch Henry, so we can really get, like, really fucked up and just party in here.
And I wanted to thank, we haven't been to the P.O. Box in a while, but last week we recorded and I forgot to thank two people that sent us things for baby Henry. We got a little crocheted dinosaur.
Oh, it's so cute, y'all.
Which is adorable. And that came from Katie. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
And then we got a little kind of horse themed lovey, which came from, looks like, Aaron King. And so thank you for that.
Thank you all for that. And sorry we haven't gone to the P.O. Box. I'm sure there's a lot of very sweet things in there for the baby. But I haven't left the house in like 6 days. So
if the P.O. Box were open at 3 a.m., we would be always up and ready to go.
Oh, boy. Here he goes. Nope. Oh, maybe. Yeah, he's waking up. This is like our third episode in a row. He's a very conscientious producer on this on this podcast.
He keeps us on time.
So next week, again, the episode will probably not be up on, we don't know when the episode's going to be up. It's very dependent on what our holiday situation is. But we're going to talk about all of the women on the next season of The Bachelor starring Nick. boy, some weird commercials for his season.
Yeah, I can't figure out what they're trying to set him up as. Like, who is his character?
Like, Sex Man. I think they're trying to say, this is Sex Man. That we had the Axeman this year. 2017 is the year of the Sex Man. Because the last thing we saw was this weird, like, robotic voice, like, beginning Bachelor building procedure. And it shows, like, Nick, and he's on Bachelor in Paradise, and he's, like, lifting weights on the beach. Or something like that, and that's like all it is.
Yeah, but it looks like a clip from Bachelor in Paradise.
It was, I think it was a clip from Bachelor
he's
in Paradise.
He's lifting like a heavy rock.
It's all just like, hey ladies, here's Nick. Wanna fuck this? And it's like, what? This is it? They also keep, and I had, oh, I'm gonna take umbrage with this every time, because you know it's gonna happen constantly during his season. They say, he got shot down 3 times. Fucking no he didn't. Check the tapes on BIP, because he definitely shot down the woman he was courting there, whose name I don't
I don't
recall.
Remember it either.
Jennifer? I think,
no.
I think it was Jennifer.
No, was it?
I think it was, this is, we have grown a lot.
Oh, maybe Jen. Maybe it was Jen.
Yes. We used to call her Moonlight Boobs. Oops. now we are the horny Alex men, I guess. But yeah, they're trying to say, like, he'd been shot down heartbroken 3 times. No, he definitely was the heartbreaker during that season a bit. Don't try and change the script on me. I know what's up. But then the commercial goes on. It's like, he had his heart broken 3 times. Wanna fuck this? And it's like a lot of his chest.
Yeah, which is weird, because I think of Nick as kind of a scrawny guy.
I mean, he's built. I mean,
he's not like a, you know, like a Cody, for example.
Sure. Oh, another BIP update. Apparently Josh and Amanda have broken up.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is awesome.
I saw something the other day that the twins are getting their own spinoff show.
What?
Someone just posted it in the Facebook group.
As a goofy goof.
I think it's real.
Why?
I don't know what that show is. I imagine it'll be
all
like...
All of this came from a 6-episode long, shitty ending television show. Blind date ass looking television show. Cheaters ass looking television show.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. God, I love this fucking show. Let me just waddle in this filth.
Did you say waddle?
Let me waddle in it. Just fucking bury me in my neck in the desert of trash that this fucking show is, and pour the hot trash juice all over my hair and let me shower in it.
With a plastic sheet.
Just give me the sexy sheet plastic trash mess, and let me just incorporate it into my body, my filth body. God, I love this fucking show. I'm gonna bury my face in it and leave a little face mark in the trash.
So this has been Rose Buddies.
I live in this dumpster. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Griffin McElroy.
I'm Rachel McElroy.
When you're ready. Final Rose, stay with us on this journey of joy. Spoiler alert! She ends up with Soulja Boy. Right reasons, right reasons.